welcome to Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your mind open and your radio tuned to the left as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
Good evening, and welcome to the Radio Ministry Outreach of Tranquility Base, where we believers carry the firm conviction that we were placed here to build the rocket ships, the space-faring pleasure vessels prescribed in Dobbsian scripture, to voyage out into the cosmos, to venture where no billion-year-old carbon has ventured before.
Speaking with Catherine Aegis, she's editor of The Transhumanist, a student of political science on the organizing committee of the World Transhumanist Association, and former editor of Extropy. She worked on the FAQ, the Frequently Asked Questions for the Transhumanist Association. Welcome, Catherine.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Very good. And I'm very much looking forward to this interview because I've only had a couple of explicitly transhumanist speakers on. I had Natasha Moore as my very first guest on the show. But I'm looking forward to bringing on more folks from the East Coast transhumanists.
Well, I'm sure that we could round up a lot of folks who'd like to talk to you, James.
Great. Now, tell us a little bit, how did you get involved in the transhumanist movement, and do you consider it a movement?
Well, I don't consider it a movement, but I'll talk about that in a minute. Although one of my first roles was as an associate editor of Extropy magazine, I actually found transhumanism in a more general sense, and that was during my graduate studies at Antioch University. I only completed a year there, but during that year, one of my advisors pointed out that a lot of what I was talking about sounded an awful lot like this man called FM 2030, and I should really read his books. So I read Are You a Transhuman? And I realized that I had found my area. It was an interesting time in my life, and I hopped onto the lists. At that point, there was the listserv operated by Extropy Institute, and there's also a listserv operated by Alex Bakov out of Michigan that focuses on general transhumanism. And at that point, things were very intense. We were getting approximately 350 messages a day off of those lists. Discussion was very high quality, very intense, and it was formulating some of the basic ideas that we operate with now. So I felt very fortunate. That was about 3 years ago. And after that, as I began to meet more people, I became more involved in other projects. Because I'm trained sociologically, my focus is a little less technical than some transhumanists, but there are also a lot of philosophers in the field. My main focuses are in the areas of body modification, gender, politics, and some of the philosophy. I would like to say, however, that I wasn't aware that I had joined a movement, although some people do consider it a movement, and this is an issue that has come under discussion recently. Transhumanism cannot properly be considered a movement because it does not exhibit the characteristics of one. Mostly, transhumanists as a whole, worldwide, have not agreed on a set of core objectives around which everyone structures their activities. What we have at this point is a variety of people pursuing a variety of activities, and I think that's a very healthy thing.
Mm-hmm.
Transhumanists pursue a wide range of endeavors, ranging from actually pursuing the hard science in things like cryonics, nanotech, longevity, to considering the underlying philosophical ideas and how to help humanity cope with the changes ahead. So there's a wide range of things going on, and we don't have core agreement on everything.
So you think of it as more of a subculture?
Some people could make it into a subculture. I think that if you absorb some of the ideas, you end up changing your life in some ways. And we have people that have completely structured their lives around transhumanist ideas because they attach great importance to them. So in that way, it could be considered a subculture. And there's actually a new journal in Canada that started called Empty Galaxy that is focusing on the cultural aesthetic aspects of it. And unfortunately, I don't have that contact information. I'd like to get it on my website. It's not available on the web. It's in hard copy. My impression, however, is that the bulk of transhumanists are happy not to pursue a movement. I think they'd rather be putting their energy into things like research or philosophy or writing papers, teaching, talking to the media, rather than trying to organize and do all of the work to make any coherent movement.
One of the key organizations, though, that got this whole thing started and is still very central is the Extropy Organization and Max Moore in particular. Can you explain a little bit, is Extropy a movement and transhumanism a culture, or do you think of...
I actually asked Greg Birch that question because I wasn't sure how to answer that. Greg Birch is currently the vice president of Extropy Institute. He's on their board, and he's also sociologically trained, so he has some good thoughts on this. When I asked him point blank, Greg, do you consider extropianism a movement? He replied, I wouldn't call it a movement, but a more or less coherent philosophy. Even more accurately, I would call it a set of highly congruent values and ideals. And, of course, what he's referring to is the Extropian principles, which I believe are in their third version so far.
Well, if an organization that has conferences, gurus, journals and people donating huge sums of money to it isn't a movement. I mean, what do you need, a paramilitary organization to be a movement?
Well, actually, they're not the only organization that is hosting conferences and getting money donated to them. I think it's important to talk about the World Transhumanist Association for a few minutes.
Please do.
This has been the subject of a lot of discussion lately. There is a growing awareness that worldwide we're operating in a large-scale network that could be referred to as transhumanism. Mm-hmm. And within transhumanism, there is a particular strain of it called extropianism.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point, other strains are going to start showing up. And there's evidence that this is happening in Europe already. There are some people who are developing different ideas related to transhumanism and different approaches, particularly in the political sphere. So extropianism at this point is a dominant strain in America, but it is not a dominant strain worldwide. And we were comparing statistics recently, and I think at this point Extropy Institute claims approximately 1,200 extropians. The World Transhumanist Association claims approximately 1,000 members worldwide at this point.
Hmm.
And they're growing. And I've shifted a lot of my activities to the WTA because some of my ideas are more in keeping with what we call general transhumanism, which is the way that we are distinguishing it from extropianism. If another strain shows up, we'll have to change that name, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
Nick Bostrom and David Pierce founded the World Transhumanist Association as an umbrella organization to sort of provide a context for all these new strains that were showing up. Nick lives in London, and David Pierce lives outside of London. And the organizing committee has, I think, 4 Americans and approximately 15 Europeans. So there's a healthy mix starting, and we're still hunting for people in other areas of the world. We've heard from people in Japan and South Africa, so we know that these ideas are beginning to spread. They haven't yet become involved, but we're certainly hoping that they will.
Yeah, I've been very delighted with trends for a similar reason that I've been involved in socialist and green politics for about 20 years. And when I first got involved in the extropian lists, those ideas were pretty much verboten on those lists. But it seems within the WTA broader framework, the broader tent, people are allowed to talk about some of the political ramifications of transhumanist trends and issues in ways that are more open tent, more generally accepted.
Well, certainly they're operating within a different political context, and it's been very interesting to talk to some of them because in America, transhumanist ideas have not been politicized, but what we're seeing is that in Europe, they are getting politicized.
Mm-hmm.
They're becoming part of the milieu of politics that are happening out there, and the transhumanists who live in places like Sweden and England and Denmark are talking about transhumanist ideas in terms of the political spectrums within their own country.
Yeah.
And I was rather amazed to find that the Swedish government is rapidly passing laws that run counter to transhumanist ideas, and they're trying to figure out how to handle that on a political level, or whether they even want to. There aren't that many transhumanists who have political agendas at this point.
Yeah, most of the European governments are so paranoid about genetics because of the fascist experience that they are very quick to clamp down on reproductive rights if it suggests anything in that direction.
Not even just genetics. I was very surprised when Anders Sandberg came to visit Washington. I live in Washington, D.C., and he came to visit for a week. And he informed me that some of the body modification procedures that we take for granted here in America are not allowed in Sweden. You can't just walk into a piercing parlor and get your body modified.
Hmm.
So this, we're actually writing about this, and it's a very interesting topic area.
Yeah. Well, in that respect, most transhumanists as extropians are libertarian in terms of bodily autonomy. That is something that we all tend to agree on, right? That we think that people should be pretty much allowed to do whatever they want to their own bodies.
Right.
I think that that's generally true.
Right.
Yeah. Are they necessarily libertarian in other ways in terms of economic libertarianism? Because I know that there's been, for instance, I was impressed with the discussion in the FAQ, and I mentioned to you earlier that I'd read it on the air a couple weeks ago when I did a show about nanotech, that in the FAQ you talk very explicitly about some of the apocalyptic scenarios of gray goo and so forth, and the needs for explicit anticipatory regulation of nanotechnology that might prevent or ward off some of these bad outcomes.
And that certainly is an area that has sparked some of what we call lively discussion. It is interesting to note, if you look at the credits on the FAQ, Nick Bostrom was the key organizer of the effort to write the FAQ. And he is getting his PhD in logic and the scientific method, and he actually wrote that section of the FAQ. He looks very closely at doomsday scenarios. Anders Sandberg, for example, and I myself spent several weeks debating him as to whether that should go in the FAQ at all. My feeling was that that kind of information could be obtained anywhere, and we should be focusing on the positive, more utopian aspects of transhumanist ideas.
Mm-hmm.
In the end, I think we came up with a compromise on that, although I would have liked to have seen a little less doomsday and a little more visionary.
No, I think I liked a lot.
Well, I'm glad to hear that. I'm sure he'll be glad to hear that, too.
Well,
I think the entire process of writing the FAQ was a very important series of events worldwide in transhumanism, because it was the first time that all of us had sat down figuratively on the Internet, come together, and asked ourselves, what areas do we all agree on? What ideas do we all share? And that simple question turned into 6 months of some of the most intense and lengthy discussion I have ever seen. And I and Nick were the first editors. We drew together all of that material and tried to put it together. And it took approximately a month of each of us working at least 3 hours a day trying to hash that out. If it gives you any idea of how much material we had to deal with and how much difference of opinion there was on some of these issues. So
I think
I'm glad to hear that you are actually using the FAQ, because what it represents is generally agreed upon principles.
Given your background, you're probably the ideal person, since you have a political science background, to write the account of how that all came about and what the principal issues of discussion were.
Well, in short, the principal areas of discussion weren't so much the technical areas, because there'd already been a lot of discussion about it, but defining our terms. What is a transhuman? There were actually 5 different definitions. And partway through the discussion, I realized we hadn't defined transhumanism, and that was a huge area of discussion. And the definition that showed up in the FAQ is actually an effort to accommodate 2 different areas, because I realized as people were putting forth their definitions that they were focusing on endeavor and thought as 2 completely separate areas. And this was a source of debate between the so-called hard sciences and the philosophers and the so-called soft sciences.
Now, the term transhumanism actually originates with Bruce Sterling's book, excuse Matrix.
Julian Huxley, actually.
Julian Huxley? Oh, I didn't know
that. Bottles for New Wine.
Oh.
If you look way further on in the FAQ, I think I'm going to ask Nick to move it.
Uh-huh.
There's an antecedents section that talks about the origins of the term transhumanism.
Oh.
Max Moore was actually the first person to formally define transhumanism.
Mm-hmm.
It was defined in an issue of XJP magazine. But the term has morphed so much since then, and Max was very much a part of the discussion in in redefining it, and he drafted the version that you see there. He took everyone's input and put it all together, and then he and Nick and I tweaked it. But I think that the current definition was left a little loose to provide for the different areas.
Yeah, the definition that Sterling seems to suggest in Schismatrix is one that I'm fond of, which is that it's a political movement or an ideological movement that should encourage, embrace the subspeciesization and post-human developments with technology and biology as we become more and more different from each other, but at the same time try to hold us all together as in common respect.
And I think you'll find a lot of disagreement with that, and Bruce Sterling did not even come up in our discussions, because one of the things we realized early on, again, was that it represents both an area of thought and an area of endeavor. And if we didn't include both of those, it would cut out half of the transhumanists there.
Hmm.
And Bruce Sterling doesn't accommodate that. He simply talks about it as an ideology or a directed set of ideas. And it's so much more than that.
Hmm. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about what current projects transhumanists are working on.
Well, it's actually a very exciting time to be a transhumanist, because our ideas are moving out into mainstream media. So one of our projects has actually been tracking that media to see what is being talked about. I mean, it used to be that just, you know, places like Wired Magazine, Mondo, Boing Boing would talk about these far-out weird ideas. But in the past month, we have seen our ideas on National Geographic, a Nightline primetime special devoted 7 weeks to transhumanist topics.
State of the Union address.
President Clinton has offered to fund nanotechnology. This is a huge thing. Of course, there's some trepidation about the federal government getting involved, but it was inevitable, given the fact that the federal government funds much of our research, including a lot of the genetic research that we're looking towards.
Yeah.
And in his State of the Union address, he expressed a great deal of enthusiasm for technologies that would involve nanotechnology. Now, it's interesting, he didn't use the actual word nanotech. He used molecular computers, and I'm not sure that people would connect it.
Mm-hmm.
However, in a speech to the California Institute of Technology last week, he did use the word nanotechnology, and he rattled on for about 5 minutes about the wonders of nanotechnology. And so one of the projects that I'm involved in is that I will be legislatively tracking that funding to see if it actually does get through the House and Senate and the budget proposals. And if it does, then we're going to find out where that money goes.
Okay. Great. So the president's in the loop. Okay. What else is coming up?
Well, transhumanists worldwide are engaged in a wide range of activities, some of which include the simple formation of new groups. We've seen groups appearing in places like Philadelphia, Florida. The Boston group is becoming more visible. There are a few in New York. Europe is seeing the formation of a lot of groups. And these groups are mostly social in nature. It's people who found each other over the internet and decided to start getting together. And that's a good thing, because face-to-face discussion helps form community and it gets people involved. And there are some people who don't want to spend all their time on the internet talking. They'd rather be seeing people face-to-face. So that's a really good development, I think. And the Washington, D.C. group has grown. I think we can claim about 40 people in our group. 2 years ago, we had 8. So as the East Coast becomes a long, high-tech corridor, I think we're going to see a lot more growth.
Mm.
So we have some new journals. You mentioned one of them, The Transhumanist, which is a smaller scale journal devoted to ideas, and that goes out in newsletter form and can be accessed through my website. Empty Galaxy started in Canada, and I hope to get that contact information out in the next issue of The Transhumanist. And The Transhumanist Times just started. It is a webzine that focuses on media issues, mainly run out of XTRP Institute. They're covering a wide range of topics, but I think the main focus is how extropian ideas are making their way through the media. And there's also, of course, the Journal of Transhumanism, which is part of the World Transhumanist Association, edited by Robin Hanson at George Mason University here in Virginia. There's also been some planning for another conference. There are actually two sets of conferences that go on. There's the extra conferences, which are focused, sponsored by XTRP Institute, and they focus mostly on extropian ideas. We also have Transvision, which is a conference sponsored by various European groups. It's more focused on general transhumanism, and this year it will take place in London. I think it's going to be in June, but they haven't set the final date yet.
Sounds good.
The BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, is going to interview several leading transhumanists for a special on hormones and aging. One of the people who will be interviewed is Brian Delaney, who is up in Chicago. He is an expert on calorie restriction and longevity. I believe Nick Bostrom, who is one of the founders of the WTA, will also be interviewed for that. And I'm sure we'll see a few more of our friends up on that. And that will happen in February. Many individuals are writing books, which I can't get them to talk about. You know how that is. They'll mention them every now and then, so we're actually expecting to see several books come out this year. I'm writing one myself. It's focused on how business people can use the Internet to interact more effectively for meetings, and it's going to focus on how to live in cyberspace as opposed to how to operate the software, which is what a lot of these manuals are about.
Well, I'm writing one myself on radical democratic approach to bioethical issues, but we'll see if that ever hits the pavement, you know, the same way as everybody else, I guess.
Well, I have decided the rule is everyone has to write a book, so I'm glad to see that you've got yours started.
Yeah.
The more out there, the better. There are several new books on nanotechnology, one of which was, I think, written by Ed Regis, but the book that's causing a great stir right now is Nanomedicine. Which is volume one of three volumes. It is a huge book, $99 from Amazon. A study group has formed to work their way through it because of the size of this. And again, on my website, I established a nano section, and I've listed the listings for that study group if anyone wants to get involved with that.
And what's your website?
You can reach it at http://www.mindspring.com/tilde_k_aegis, A-E-G-I-S.
Very good. And the World Transhumanist Association is www.transhumanism.com?
Yes. And there's a link to the Transhumanist on my website, but it can also be accessed at www.transhuman.com.
Mm-hmm.
Two very similar addresses there.
Now, we only have a couple of minutes left, so let's hit the hot topic of sexuality. You've written about this, and you're going to be setting up a sexuality webpage for the WTA or the Transhumanist magazine.
Well, I'm going to be setting up a Transhumanist gender set of web pages. And I think that the big issue is going to relate more to gender than to sexuality, although sexuality is an important part of human life. Certainly, the various body modification technologies are going to influence things like reproduction and individual choice. But some of the transhumanist technologies also impact it. As we've all heard, cloning is now being sold as a way to reproduce. For some couples.
So reproductive technologies would be in that bailiwick.
Yeah, and there's a lot of work genetically in the area of reproduction. And in fact, it has applications in cryonics because very recently a few researchers in Japan claim that they have successfully frozen and thawed a human egg, which is the largest single cell in the human body. So this has some interesting applications for cryonics.
So gender modification would also fit into that, the increasing ability for us to switch genders or to assume intermediate genders.
And there are some really interesting issues there, because the way in which people who decide to change their gender are treated is actually a harbinger for how people who modify themselves are going to be treated.
Mm-hmm.
And that is something that I really want to write about. I'm working on a paper outlining the various obstacles to modifying your body. Currently, on the planet Earth, we do not have complete ownership of our bodies. There is nowhere that you can go, put down cash money, and get your body modified without the government, some government, or medical establishment saying, yes, you can. No, you can't.
If I can't wear a dress to work, I won't be able to take my forearms to work.
It's even worse than that. To access all of the new body modification technologies, you have to prove that you have some sort of physical or mental pathology. For instance, everyone's excited about Stevie Wonder possibly getting the chance to see using a retinal implant. People with normal eyesight who want to enhance their eyes don't have access to that technology. They have to prove that they can't see.
That's right. Or cognitive enhancement drugs. We won't be able to take it to make ourselves smarter. We'll just be able to take it to ward off Alzheimer's disease.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's going to be a huge frontier in the area of civil liberties, politics, individual freedom.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really want to thank you for coming on today, and I want you also to mention your new nanotech funding page. You have a campaign going to support the president's initiative for
funding. No, I don't have a campaign.
You're going to track it. You're tracking it.
Yes, I'm tracking it.
Okay.
I'm tracking it.
But you're not saying that you support it. You're not saying it's a good idea. But
Well, given that federal funding strongly supported the Human Genome Project, I don't necessarily have an objection to this.
Mm-hmm.
And if some of that funding goes to private companies, I think it's even better. In fact, I think there should be a mix. The government and private companies should all be working. We've seen how this works in the human genome field. The Human Genome Project is taking one approach, and Celera Corporation is taking an entirely different approach, and they're both discovering different kinds of information, and I think that's a very healthy thing.
Except if Celera gets there first, we're all going to pay an arm and a leg in order to be able to use it.
Well, Celera's information is actually different, and the Human Genome Project is publishing its information every single day.
Mm-hmm.
So it really is going to balance out in the long run.
I hope so. That's another place where I'm very concerned about the privatization of the future, though. Well, I really want to thank you. What is the nanotech page, by the way?
It's on my website.
Okay.
You go to the main page and click on the nanotechnology section. That will take you to a set of resources where you can go to read more about nanotech. It will give a list of books, and it will mention the federal tracking page.
I've been speaking with Catherine Aegis. She's editor of The Transhumanist, a key transhumanist activist around the country. A fellow graduate of an Ohio liberal arts college, and a fellow political scientist, sociologist in this field. So thank you very much for joining us.
Well, thank you very much, James, for inviting me on.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. Change Surfer Radio is produced at WHUS FM at the University of Connecticut in Storrs. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or you want to share your thoughts about this show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes, J-H-U-G-H-E-S, at changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com.